Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Tuesday, March 3rd, welcome, 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 friends, on into the program. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. Today on the show, we're checking out the housing market. Interest rates below 6% for the first time in a long time, but the market still feels a little frozen, a little sludgy. We'll look at the macroeconomics, and then we'll also zoom in on the local housing market. How's it doing? How's it changing? We'll also get into the age-old debate. Should you buy or should you rent? It's very hard to afford a home these days. A lot of people saying, look, I'll just put my excess income in the stock market or invest it in some other way. If you have a story about that, if you're thinking about renting or buying or neither, or you're caught in between, we'd love to hear from you this hour. We're also asking more generally, do you still think home ownership is central to the American dream? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can email studio2 at whyy.org, or if you're on YouTube or Facebook, you can drop a comment in the chat.
Yeah, I hope we get some good callers today to share their stories about this, because a lot of folks are hosting their kids, you know, because it's so hard to get out here. They want them to be able to save money because you can't pay high rents and save money for a down payment. It's really hard. So is home ownership still central to the American dream? 888-477-9499. Email studio2 at whyy.org. So we got a trio of news stories.
Trio on March 3rd.
I like this, yes. Philadelphia is on the short list to host the Democratic National Convention in 2028. DNC officials made the announcement on Monday. The city of brotherly love is being considered alongside Atlanta, Boston, Chicago, and Denver. It'll be the place where Democrats, of course, launch their nominee for president. The PIC Pennsylvania host committee comprised of top Philadelphia Democrats and donors and Mayor Sherelle Parker. They're the ones who submitted that bid to the
PIC DNC. PIC Pennsylvania is their name?
Their name is PIC Pennsylvania.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we're a swing state. So pretty important to Democrats and Republicans during the presidential election. And DNC leaders, the advisors, are expected to visit Philadelphia this season. In the spring, and if selected, the mayor, as well as Governor Josh Shapiro, who many suspect will run for president in 2028, they will play a major role in planning the convention. The DNC is set to take place in August the 7th through the 10th in 2028. And if Philadelphia is chosen, it would be at the Xfinity Mobile Arena in South Philadelphia. I'm thinking back to 2016 when we had the DNC.
Yep.
Huge economic impact on the city.
Yeah, I mean, let's look at the other contenders here.
Yeah.
Chicago. Their pizza is trash, and they put vegetables on their hot dogs. They're out.
And they had it in 2024.
So. Also, they already have the Pope, so don't be greedy, Chicago. Chicago's out. Denver. It's a nice city, but good luck giving your acceptance speech as you gasp for air a mile above the earth.
Oh, God.
They're out. Atlanta. Look, I hope the seat cushions are absorbent.
Yeah.
Because you're going to be sweating your you-know-whats off
in the summer,
in the Georgia heat in August, okay? And then you got Boston, which is the bluest city in the bluest state, so you just blew your opportunity to reach swing voters. So I think Philadelphia is the clear frontrunner, in my humble opinion.
Yeah.
Philadelphia, a city with zero documented problems ever. You can look that up.
Yeah, and I'll tell you my bet. I think if Philadelphia...
We're betting? This is a Kalshi thing?
No, I'm not going to do Kalshi. I think we have we're probably among the top two. But I think Atlanta...
What's the top one?
I think Atlanta might get it this time.
Wow, former Atlanta resident here.
I do say that. And the only reason why...
Interesting you say that.
It's because...
Given your connection to Atlanta. Go ahead.
Atlanta hasn't had the DNC since the 80s.
Okay.
And we had it...
I care why.
We had it in 2016. Boston had it in 2004. Everybody's had it within the past 25 or so years, except Atlanta.
Because it's too hot.
I know. But I would love for it to be in Philadelphia. So I'm Philly over everybody always. But if I was on Kyle Sheen, that's what I would...
You would pick Atlanta?
40 cents on it. 40 cents.
All right. Hot Atlanta. Yeah.
Story number two.
Just bring a sweat rag is all I'm saying. Okay. After a two-year campaign by a parents group, the Philadelphia School District has approved a new wellness policy that guarantees each child recess, bathroom breaks, and water breaks. This has become some schools had reportedly restricted access to these breaks as a form of punishment. So now That is no more. Also, elementary age students are guaranteed some sort of movement break every 90 minutes, a little wiggle time for the little ones. This comes after an 18-month push by a parent group called Lift Every Voice. They were finally successful. And this is now a new comprehensive wellness policy for the school district of Philadelphia. Also, by the way, the district has gotten rid of half days. Half days are gone. The superintendent said they were a drag on attendance, and so no more half days for the largest school district in the state of Pennsylvania.
I know those parents are so happy about that half day situation.
Yeah, half days are
Oh my God.
Because you still have to go through the whole process of getting them to and from, but then you don't get coverage for the whole day.
For the whole day. Yeah. So I know they're happy about that. But I have to say, when I did not know that kids couldn't use the bathroom as a form of punishment, that was kind of, I know, and to be clear, it's not something that was happening in any widespread way. But and so now it's just guarantees that they get these bathroom breaks. But this got me to thinking about, like, because I went to Catholic school growing up, like how I was punished. And I remember I fell asleep one time in class and my teacher came up when I was asleep, just drooling.
Yeah.
Clapped really loud, and then I had to I fell out my little chair. I was like,
"You fell out of the chair?"
Because I was jumped. I was like sleeping really hard, and
you're literal here. You fell onto the ground.
Well, I jumped out of my chair.
Oh, you're being figurative. Got it.
Yeah, and then I had to write like 500 times with a pencil. I will not fall asleep in class ever, ever, ever again.
Wow. Bart Simpson style.
Like old school. That's old school.
Yeah, I don't think they do that anymore.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it just goes to show, like, but I will tell you that I've never fallen asleep in class again.
Yeah.
But I have fallen asleep at a concert, but not in
really?
Class.
Really? What concert?
Jill Scott.
No, Jilly from Philly?
Yeah.
That's rough.
Yeah. So I was really tired.
You must have had an excuse.
I did.
It was a long
super
week.
Super tired.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But
I'm going to let you off on
but
that.
But kudos
one.
To the parents, Lift Every Voice, for getting that measure passed.
And to be clear, you do like Jill Scott, and she puts on a great show.
She does.
Make sure we establish that.
I was really tired.
Okay, fair enough. There was a guy once who famously fell asleep in the front row of a Sixers playoff game. Did you see that?
That's worse.
And
that's
the cameras caught him, and he was passed out. Yeah.
He must have been really tired as well.
That is what he claimed. Yeah. He claimed alcohol was not involved.
No. Yeah.
And nor was it in your case.
Not in my, I was literally, okay, I had done it all night.
Very, very tired. Got it. Okay. You might have needed a little sweet treat as a pick-me-up, right? Okay,
yes.
So let's get to the third story.
Third story. And a sign that the warmer weather is coming, Rita's announced that it is teaming up with Peeps to launch a new water ice flavor this spring. Yay.
Yay, I guess. Yeah.
According to Philly Voice, the mystery Italian ice is white and primarily tastes like marshmallow, but it has a mystery ingredient. And, you know, you...
Ooh. Mystery.
The water ice will include a peep, which is a sugary baby chick shaped like a marshmallow, if you haven't had a peep. And between March 20th and 29th, people can guess the flavor, log it online, and enter at winning a shot at free water ice for an entire year.
So if you guess the mystery flavor in addition to the peep marshmallow flavor.
Yeah, and yeah, then you get it.
This is a very complicated contest, I have to say.
And I mean, like, that means, but they do give them away for free on the 20th, which is the launch. So you can go there, get your free water ice, and then try to guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, Rita's was founded in Bensalem 42 years ago. And it said that this mystery peep flavor is one of 7 new flavors that they are debuting this year. The other 6 have not yet been announced.
That's a lot of new flavors.
Yeah, that's a lot to keep track.
I don't want them to stray too much from the core, you know? Like, they've got good stuff there at the core. You don't want them to be experimenting too much.
I just stick with the cherry.
For sure. Cherry, lemon.
Yeah.
I will say there is one place I go if I want more experimental water ice flavors. D'Amelio's Old World Ice Treats on Passyunk Avenue.
Yeah.
Check them out if you want something off the beaten path. But if I'm at Rita's or one of the more traditional places, let's just keep it simple.
Cherry with the custard.
Lemon,
yeah.
With the custard.
Yeah.
The gelati. Just don't complicate things.
Yeah.
Marshmallow flavor?
First of all, what does marshmallow taste like?
What does marshmallow taste like?
Yeah, they say marshmallow. I don't feel like marshmallow has a real flavor.
Have you had marshmallows?
Yeah, but what does it taste like? It's like a blob of sugar.
Wait. What's the conversation we're having right now?
I don't know what it tastes like.
You don't know what, you can't describe
it. I don't think marshmallow has a distinct flavor. Like, I feel like it just tastes like.
So when you eat a s'more, you don't think there's a flavor?
It just tastes like sugar to me. But like, what is the flavor?
It's marshmallow.
I'm sorry.
It's the flavor is marshmallow. Peeps, what makes Peeps different is they have that gritty sugar exterior, which I really hope is not replicated in this new.
We were talking about this in the meeting and the producer, we were all talking about this. I was like, I don't know what flavor marshmallow is. And you're like, the flavor is marshmallow.
It's like saying, I don't know what vanilla is. Vanilla tastes like vanilla.
Well, it doesn't have a distinct flavor to me. Maybe something's wrong with the buzz.
This conversation is going to drive me insane.
I'm sorry, Avi Wolf and Aaron.
The wheels are spinning in my head right now. Marshmallow tastes like marshmallow. Lemon tastes like lemon. Cherry tastes like cherry.
I know what cherry tastes like.
Cherry, Greg, and I will be back to discuss the housing market and leave this conversation well in the past.
And we needed a fun day.
Okay. 888-477-9499 with your thoughts on homeownership. Is it still central to the American dream? Let us know. We'll be right back.
WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
And welcome back to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Today on the show, we're unpacking the state of the housing market. Interest rates dipped below 6% last week. That's the lowest since 2022. Gone are the days when sellers could drop a property onto the market with a higher than average price and still expect to sell it quickly.
But the economics for first-time buyers are still tough, with a lot of younger people feeling left behind. We're also looking at the broader economics of housing. Is the market still frozen? Is the housing bubble about to burst?
Joining us in our Philadelphia studios is Mike Coleman, realtor and adjunct instructor at Temple University's Real Estate Institute. Mike, so good to have you back on Studio 2.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
We also have Kevin Gillen, principal research fellow at the Real Estate Institute at Drexel University. Kevin, also great to have you back on the show.
Thanks for having me.
And for you, our listeners at home, on the road, or elsewhere, we would love to hear from you. Our question of the day is home ownership still central to the American dream? And if you yourself, if you're considering whether to rent or buy, we'd love to hear your story as well. The number to call is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're on streaming on YouTube or Facebook, put your comments in the chat.
Jeff says, if I was single and looking for a place to live today, I would 100% be renting. As a homeowner, I will tell you, when that water heater starts leaking or that heater goes down in the dead of winter, it feels like a very easy decision to make. Ryan disagrees. Ryan says, yes, don't be fooled. Home ownership is critical. So let's put that debate just to the side for a second, Kevin. I want to hear from you what you think is changing in the housing market right now, locally and nationally, that you think is important to follow. Something that's shifting.
As far as the market goes, inventories and interest rates are basically in a fist fight, I think, to determine what 2026 is going to look like. We don't know which one's going to win. We know that we'd like interest rates to come down and we'd like inventories to come up because there's such a shortage of supply out there. But those things tend to happen slowly. And they're certainly beyond our local control. There's very little we can do to influence the Fed's decisions about interest rates. More broadly, the affordability issue has implications that go way beyond just the housing sector or even the economy. It has social implications as well, for the very simple reason that homeowners tend to be much more active and hence better citizens than renters. We like to use the analogy similar to when you buy a stock or a bond, you invest in it, and then you get a stream of payments back, coupon payments or dividend payments. Well, when you buy a house, you pay property taxes and you get a stream of public services, your schools, your police, your fire. Well, when you're paying for those things directly out of your taxes, you tend to care about the quality and the cost more so than if they just seem to fall out of the sky because, you're a renter, you don't ever really see the bill. So people who own homes tend to go to school board meetings. They tend to be civically engaged. They go to community meetings. They volunteer. They keep their lawns and their clean and their houses better kept. So a declining home ownership rate has implications far beyond just what the revenue effect might be on the industry or even what the wealth effect might be on future citizens of the U.S. It goes to what kind of society we'll have.
Yeah.
Mike, I want to hear from you about what you see, what you sense is changing out there in the housing market.
Yeah, I mean, the decision to rent versus buy is a big question every single day. And to Kevin's point, because rents have come up so much, it's very hard to kind of balance it out with, I want to own a home, but that costs money as well. So I'm going to spend the same amount of money to rent versus buy. I might choose to rent for now and figure out what's going to happen with the rates, which we are hoping keep coming down, but I don't think they're going to go down that much.
Mm. Yeah. And I want to ask you, you know, LookABear88 on YouTube, how you doing? Says, I left my apartment because it was getting too high. And I felt if I'm paying this much, I might as well own my property. A lot of people starting to feel that right now as rents keep jacking up and up and up. But Mike, when before the show, we were talking a little bit and you said 2021 was a great year in the real estate market for you. What is it like now that you have the interest rates and the inventory sort of having this fist fight that Kevin just talked about?
Well, 21 was great for agents and sellers.
Yeah.
But to be fair, it was not great for
consultants.
And consultants, right.
Yeah.
It was not great for buyers at all. I mean, that was so hard. So many buyers had to put, you know, 5, 6, 10 offers in to get a house. Then they're paying way over. And now...
And if you didn't have the cash,
yeah,
it was tough.
Right, right. You were up against a lot of cash buyers that had family money to help them out. But you don't have that, but you, definitely disadvantage. Now it's a bit more of a normal market, whatever normal means. So buyers are getting offers accepted with home inspections and financing contingencies and in some cases home sale contingencies, which they just couldn't do a couple years ago.
And so I wanted to follow up with you because now if you put it out there, if you put your house on the market, you have to price it to sell. You can't just jack up the price and expect people to purchase.
Oh, yeah. Back then, we could put it up at whatever number we chose, and it was going to sell. You know, the market would come and push it to wherever it was supposed to be. Now, if you don't price it right from the beginning and it doesn't show well from the beginning, you're going to sit on market.
Mm. Are you seeing the same thing, Kevin? Like, people, this is becoming more of a buyer's versus a seller's market?
I characterize it as more of a return to a balanced market than I would an actual contraction. It's certainly not a collapse. First of all, one of the questions I get asked all the time on my speaking engagements is, are we in another bubble? My short answer is no. That doesn't mean we're not in a soft spot. We are. We are entering into one. But it's more of a normal, a downturn in the market, a normal cooling rather than an absolute collapse. And we know this from the numbers. Credit scores of today's borrowers are much, much higher than they were during the housing bubble of 15 years ago. We know banks are not nearly as leveraged. They don't have all these exotic mortgage products out there like interest-only loans and, you know, things like that. And on top of that, buyers today are being screened much, much more stringently than they were 15, 20 years ago. We used to joke, if you had a pulse and could fog up a mirror, you could get a mortgage,
yeah.
Right? I mean, sellers were, agents were doing showings without buyers even being pre-qualified because, you would qualify. If all home prices are going up, lenders would throw money at you, right? They are no longer doing that. So we're not in as nearly in as leveraged or exposed to risk position in this current market as we were 15 years ago.
It's not quite the Wild West of 2006, mm-hmm. 2007. Let me read this comment from Algernon, who says, I think home ownership is still key to the American dream in the sense that it can provide stability, build wealth, and community. There are costs, expenses, and responsibilities that come along with it. No matter how we slice it, someone who rents always rents from someone who owns. I want to bring in someone with a different perspective. This is David from Upper Darby, who is on the line. David, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi, guys. Well, my father sold real estate in Delaware County his whole life, very successful. And my dream was to have a house, definitely. But you know what? I'm in an apartment, and I'm very grateful. I have no insurance payments, no yard work, don't have to replace roofs, no heating systems, no appliances, no taxes. It just works for me. My two sisters own homes, like I said, mm-hmm. But I have no repairs, no utilities, and no worries. And I'm very content.
Yeah, thank David, you. Quick follow-up question. Do you worry about the price of your rent going up, up, up?
It's gone up $50 for the last 3 years. I'm still under $1,200 a month.
Oh, wow.
And, like I said, no appliances. It just works for me. And I happen to have wind on a corner unit, first floor, and I get the east, south, and west sun. So I'm very happy in an
lucky
apartment.
Lucky you, David, from Upper Darby.
Well, I'm happy that David's happy.
David's happy over here. Yeah.
I think this gets to a question about people's values and what they see as important. And look, for a long time, Kevin, this idea of home ownership was baked into what people were dreaming about for their own lives. And then there was also the economic side of it, which is that it was the main way for people to, you know, build wealth. Mm-hmm. Do you think there has been a retreat from either of those positions among the average American, specifically, I would say, younger Americans, that A, they're less concerned about the cultural importance of a home, but also less convinced about the economic argument?
And it goes beyond that. If you talk to young people, and I do, I teach, they think that homeownership is not even in the cards for them. And not because they don't want it. They just think it won't happen. It's not possible. They're very, very pessimistic about that. If you ask them...
With good reason?
Yes. If you ask them, would you like to own a home? Yes. Do you think you will own a home? No. I hear that all the time.
And what are their reasons?
Not until I'm middle-aged. Oh, the affordability constraint.
Yeah,
affordability. The biggest one is the down payment.
Yep.
Right now, since COVID, one thing that we've seen and a lot of realtors have told me is the percent of first-time buyers that are getting cash assistance from their parents that would have been their inheritance. But instead, the parents are like, you got to start building wealth now. Plus, you know, we want grandkids. Can't do that in a one-bedroom apartment, so here's some help, and get busy. So we know that that's happening in California, for example. Right now, one out of every home sales in California is via inheritance. It's a kid inheriting from the parents. Prior to COVID, it was about 10% of all home sales in California, and for the national average prior to COVID was 5%. All right. So when 1/5 of all your sales are just from inheritances, that tells you something's out of whack or how exacerbated the affordability problem has become.
Hmm. Yeah. We have a couple comments. Algernon says, I think home ownership is still key to the American dream in the sense that it can provide stability, build wealth and community. There are costs, expenses and responsibilities that come along with it. No matter how we slice it, someone who rents always rents from someone who owns. Over long time durations, for many folks, ownership provides the forced savings and stability needed to be a cornerstone of financial security. So, Mike, I mean, what are you seeing, you know, on the ground? And I specifically wonder, like, who are the ones who are able to buy a home and who sort of left out? And I think about what Kevin was talking about right before the bubble. Anybody with a pulse could buy. And now you need a lot to be able to qualify.
Yeah, to Kevin's point, I've never seen so many cash buyers, any young cash buyers, as we did during COVID. And it was family money. It was parents that stepped in and said, we're sorry you keep getting outbid. Here's $500,000. I had clients get a $1.4 million gift last year to buy a house. Which is nice. I don't have that, but yeah. But many people do. And I think, you know, that's been a big driver of those who were able to purchase in the last few years. Now it's more people relying on their own funds, and they are concerned because the interest rates have pushed a lot of people out of the market because of the affordability factor. And I just think that to the point about ownership, I think people do still value it from a wealth perspective, and I certainly do, but I sell real estate and I rent.
Yeah,
and people are surprised. I used to own 7 houses. I now have 0.
And why? Why did you decide to flip?
Well, divorce for one, but
that'll
you know,
do it.
Coming out
yeah.
of that shifted some things. But now, as I've been renting for about 5.5 years, now I'm looking back to buy again because my family is expanding, and I'm looking to build wealth for a 3-year-old. So I'm trying to make sure that she's set and has all of the things that come with homeownership and assets.
And I just wonder, you know, Kevin, working class Americans. A lot of people don't have rich parents. And so if you don't have a rich mom or dad or granddad that can just write you a check to pay your down payment or help you swoop in, how do you break into this market?
Yeah, affordability is not just a problem. It's also a very unfair, regressive problem because it falls hardest on lower income people, right? I mean, if you have wealthy parents, you can get around the down payment hurdle, right? But not if you don't. So that is actually having implications beyond just the housing market and going into the renter market because people that aren't or can't buy are renting longer. The apartments that we've had built here in Philadelphia and especially in the suburbs during the current post-COVID boom reflect that shift in lifestyles because we're seeing more 2 and 3, even 4-bedroom apartments being built for families. And apartment buildings now aren't just buildings. They're offering a whole community neighborhood type lifestyle. I mean, there's lots of common areas, lots of amenities, lots of facilities. I mean, outdoors, you got dog runs and you've got fire pits and some shared kitchens. And of course, the fitness space has the latest equipment. And it's actually meant to, you know, for people who are into their 30s that aren't buying, but they're coupling up, getting married, having kids. This offers an actual community type lifestyle rather than just living in, you know, the traditional 1-bedroom apartment that everyone had when they were in their 20s. Right?
So they're making renting seem more accessible, more like attractive, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. More,
and it's
more
interesting.
More communal.
Matt has a comment here. Why is it so hard to find 3-bedroom apartments? I know somebody who has 2 kids and simply can't find an apartment with 3 bedrooms. They're forced to rent a house or buy. But what you're saying, Kevin, is actually builders are seeing that and they are responding by trying to build more housing like that, so people who still want to rent but are further along in that sort of family development spectrum could continue to rent, essentially. I think you were going to chime in there.
Yeah, and I live in one of those communities where we have multiple buildings. The amenities are insane.
Yeah.
Like I would never have if I owned. And you can get a three-bedroom apartment in one of the buildings, but it's going to probably be $4,000 to $5,000 a month.
Wow.
So they're out there, but they're insanely expensive.
But they're expensive. Yeah. Let's bring in a caller. Yeah. This is Lauren from Lansdale, Pennsylvania, on the line. Hey, Lauren, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi. So I've been listening to this, and I'm in my early 30s, and my partner and I have been renting for the last, like, 6 or 7 years, and he and I have a sort of running joke that we will never own a home just because of the cost where we live. And, you know, his parents actually retired abroad and then came back about 2 years ago, and they weren't able to find a house that was in their budget, and they had owned a home all, you know, their entire lives, essentially living here. So, you know, he and I is just sort of, well, thankfully, we have a private landlord who has not raised our rent very much. So, you know, we're not really being priced out of our rental right now. Mm. But in situations like last year, our window was leaking when it was raining really hard, and we just called our landlord and he fixed it. Mm. You know, as opposed to if we had owned the house, we would have had to, you know, shell out however much money it would be to have somebody come out and look at it. So I can see the pros and cons to both. But to be honest, where I live, in Lansdale, you know, in the kind of the Montgomery County area, all of these kind of starter homes, as they're calling them, are going for like $500,000.
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't have the money for a down payment for that.
And let me ask you as a follow-up, Lauren, real quick.
Sure.
So if you feel like, look, this is out of reach and it's almost like this impossible dream, why even worry about it? Let's just keep renting. Do you develop then like an alternative pathway for saving or building some sort of nest egg or building wealth?
Yeah. I mean, you know, we always, you know, there's like the sort of mentality of like, you know, you want to have 6 months worth of savings for, you know, expenses, things like that. So, yeah, I mean, we're, you know, I have money in the stock market. You know, I actually just ventured into consulting. So I have my own LLC now. So I am trying to build wealth in other ways. Yeah. And, you know, if what happens is eventually if I end up saving enough money and we find the right house, you know, maybe because the other thing that we look at a lot around in our area is there is a lot of flips. Mm. And they're just kind of a nightmare to deal with because
yes.
It's very, you know, they go on the market, you know, they get sold and then 3 months later they're on the market again. And it just seems to be like I just look at those houses and I wouldn't touch them with a 20-foot pole just because of all the potential problems.
Yeah.
So, and I have friends who own houses and they're like, hey, don't ever buy a house.
Yeah.
Pessimistic friends.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, Lauren.
Thanks, Lauren.
Interesting perspective.
By the way, I want to restate our question and give our number again. The question of the day is home ownership still central to the American dream? And if you have a story like Lauren did about buying versus renting, you can give us a call. The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, thank you. You can keep your comments coming in the chat. Better Integra on YouTube says, for a handyman like myself, home ownership has been wonderful, keeping me busy. And the time spent feels like it harnesses some value. But if you need to have someone else do all the maintenance, then rent. Can we walk through the process, Mike, of just sort of like how you figure? Because you went through the process because you had to flip because of your situation. But like, they're making renting so appealing now, building the community. You have all the amenities like indoor pools and gyms and all sorts of nice things. So how do you sort of walk through the pros or cons and figure out like, is now the time for me to flip over from a renter to a buyer? And you're not a handyman like our YouTuber over
there. You don't want me fixing anything, believe me. and that's just it. When I did own my home, I touched nothing for the benefit of the house. I had people that fix things.
So that costs money,
Everything costs money, you know, and you know, we had someone that cut the grass and we had someone that cleaned because it just worked for our schedules. And of course, that all comes at a cost. With the renting, the fact that I can come home and everything's done and to the point that was made earlier, if something breaks, which is rare, I put it in the app and it's fixed by the time I come home. You know, with a little note saying, thank you for being here.
So pop your collar. You're like, I don't have to do anything. Right. You know, Kevin, any thoughts about how you walk through the process and say, hey, now is a time where maybe I need to consider that buying is the option?
Well, I have to remind people that, you know, buying a house, you know, is as much a personal lifestyle choice as it is a financial decision and investment commitment, right? So, you know, emotion is involved and how you want to live matters. So people will always ask me, so, you know, where's the next hot place to buy, or how much should I pay for this house, or, you know, should I get into the market now or wait? And my response to that is, well, first of all, why are you buying a home? If you're buying it to flip it, okay, my answer is going to be very different than if you're buying it because you want to live there and raise a family for the next 10 to 20 years, yeah. Okay? Because those are very different objectives. So, you know, if you're not a handy person and you don't like repairing things, you know, as I point out to people, you can't outsource your plumbing problem to either your AI or China, right? So if you don't
ChatGPT
like...
ChatGPT can't fix yeah. that.
So if you don't like doing that, then you're better off renting. And there's no mm-hmm. shame in that, okay? Yeah. Your time is better spent doing something else that you're productive at.
Yeah.
And put your money in the stock market where it gets 7% to 8% per year rather than 4% to 5%, which is the typical Philly home. That makes complete rational sense. But on the other hand, if you know you spend a lot of time in your home because you like to cook or whatever, you like to read or just you know do things with your family, you're just a domestic person, and therefore you want your home to be laid out the way you want it, with the colors that you want, the fixtures you want, the appliances that you want, well, then it makes a lot more sense for you to buy regardless of where the market is at. You have to still be sensible about the price and about your personal financial situation, be realistic.
Yeah.
But it does make more sense to buy then, regardless of where you are in the economic cycle.
Yeah. And if I could just chime in on that too, you know, I still believe that home ownership is the way to wealth for most people. I mean, eventually...
Let me ask you about that though, because our last caller mentioned the mm-hmm. stock market. There's so many vehicles for investing in the stock market now, whether you do it through your employer, whether you do it individually, mm-hmm. there's apps. And I do think that holds a lot of appeal for sure. younger people especially. And I also wonder, with the recent performance of the stock market, maybe people have a sense that this thing's just going to go up, 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 and there's not as much risk as someone who's lived through some crashes mm-hmm. might think. And I'm just curious, when you talk to people, Mike, what they say about investment in the stock market as a way to build wealth, because that alternative is sitting right there.
Sure, and I have a lot of people that have gotten into the market, and they did the options boom and the GameStop wave, you know, sure. a couple years ago and all of that. Certainly that's an additional vehicle, but when I think of real estate as a wealth builder, I think long term. You know, I'm not buying to flip, although I probably will at some point for certain reasons, but I'm looking at holding for 20, 30 years,
yeah.
which with that, I'm expecting to have everything paid off, have that passive income, and be somewhere on an island, hopefully, you know, but I just really think that, you know, there are very few things, and the stock market is certainly one of them, but absent that, unless you want to work until the day you die, you need a plan in place that's going to be paying the bills when you don't want to work anymore, and I would like to hit that point sooner than later, and I think for me, I understand real estate way better than the stock market, so it makes sense for me. Mm.
Yeah, maybe we can get one more caller in before we go to break. Barb from Kennett Square is on the line. Barb, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Yes, hi. I'm calling because my husband and I were renting this little row house in Westchester when we were first married in 1973. And the woman who owned it decided she wanted to sell it. So she offered to us the lease purchase opportunity, which we jumped on. I did go out and look at what real estate was like in the rest of Westchester because I wanted to make sure we were getting a good deal, and we did get a really good deal. Do they do that anymore, lease purchase?
Yeah, that's Barb from Kennett Square. Do people still do lease purchase?
It's a thing. It's not as common as people think it is. I have a mm-hmm. lot of people say, do you have any rent-to-own homes? That's not really a booming class of things that are out there, but it does happen. There's a million ways to structure it, and for some people it can be a great way to get in as a renter and build toward the ownership piece. They often fall apart though as well.
Ooh.
Because if you're renting now, there's a reason you're not buying, and many people start off with the plan to buy, but they're not ready to buy by that end date that you've set where you're supposed to be able to buy the house, and so they end up not moving forward. So at least that's been my experience.
There's some risk there. Let me read a few more comments as we get ready for a break. Evan Shea, 5812 on YouTube, says, all these arguments that renters don't pay taxes, utilities, and maintenance are ridiculous. The costs are just baked into the rent, and all the equity goes to the landlord. Here's a comment from Judith. In 1998, I borrowed $20,000 from my brother to buy a house in Queen Village. I paid that back with equity from that house, and 5 years later, I sold it for double the price I paid. I then used that money to buy a more expensive house and then sold it 13 years later for another profit. I'm now retired and was able to pay cash for my nice condo, which has almost doubled in value since I bought it 9 years ago.
Judith!
This is how you build home equity, and I will now pass it down to my children. Judith,
but she bought it the
home
right
run
time.
After home
I'm
run
like,
after
what?
Home run. Okay, we want to hear from you out there. What are your thoughts on home ownership versus renting? Studio 2 at WHYY.org. We'll be right back.
WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Welcome back to Studio 2 here on WHYY. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman. Aaron, this hour we're talking about the state of the local real estate market.
And with us in our Philadelphia studios, we have Mike Coleman, realtor and adjunct instructor at Temple University's Real Estate Institute, and Kevin Gillen, principal research fellow at the LeBeau College of Business at Drexel University.
And we'd love to hear from you, whether you own, rent, or neither. What do you think? Is home ownership still central to the American dream? Tell us your story. Our email is studio2@whyy.org. You can also call 888-477-9499. And if you are streaming on YouTube or Facebook, put a comment in the chat.
And I wanted to go back to Judith's comment from just before the break. You know, Kevin, I think about Judith buying in 1998, has doubled the value of her property multiple times, started from a loan from her brother, and now is living very comfortably in her condo that she was able to pay for cash. A lot of young people, they hear these stories of folks being able to do this in the 1900s, okay? And they feel like people who were able, who were old enough to buy homes in the 1900s coming to tell you that this is possible for you too. And Kevin, is that something that a person, if they enter the market now, could see happening in 25 years for them?
Well, real estate is typically a long-term investment. I mean, there are people who flip and they do get luck. Some people get lucky and some people are just very good at it, but those are mostly full-time players in the market. But if you buy and hold long enough, traditionally in American housing, you'll come out a winner.
Yeah.
Now, whether or not you're going to beat the stock market or even beat the housing market average as a whole, that is more questionable. But typically, housing traditionally has been a very good long-term investment. And I would point out, unlike stocks or bonds, you cannot affect the value of your share of, you know, NVIDIA, right, or the value of your T-bill. You can affect the value of your home through the improvements you make to it, the maintenance you do, as well as the civic engagement you have in your community that goes to, you know, whether you have low crime and good schools and things like that.
There's a steadiness and a sense of control that comes with, and not with just a sense, a reality of control that comes with home ownership that doesn't exist with some other investments. I want to bring in another caller. Mm-hmm. This is Lori from Lancaster County on line 3. Hey, Lori, you're on Studio 2. Thanks for holding. What's your question or comment?
Hi, great program, and I love your show.
Thanks, Lori.
Oh, thank you.
Every single day.
Well, it's already a great call, but go ahead, Lori.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. It's true. So I just want to weigh in to say I bought my first home when I was in my early 20s. I had almost zero money, and I had moved to Pennsylvania to work. I had just graduated from graduate school. And someone in the lunchroom just said, well, if you're looking for an apartment, why don't you look for a house? And I grew up very poor. I never knew my dad. I had drugs and alcoholism all in my family. So someone as young as me should have never bought a house at 25 years old. Everything was against me. But I found an agent who was probably a multi-million dollar agent, and she helped me to buy my house. She helped me to get on a budget, and she helped me to understand what I would expect as a young homeowner. She's long gone now, but if we had more people that could help those people who do want to accomplish the American dream, I do believe home ownership is absolutely essential to the American dream for those of us who do want to have that experience.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to share that. I'm a landlord. My assets are almost over $1 million. So I think I'm doing pretty good as a homeowner.
Go ahead, Lori from Lancaster County. I love that story from Lori. And I wonder if we talk solutions a little bit, because a lot of people want to feel some hope like Lori had, right? She had the right, said somebody educated her, gave her a little bit leg up. She didn't have it built in her family. And so, you know, the mayor has made affordability of housing a top priority. She's rolled out this home initiative where, 30,000 affordable housing units. There's some other efforts within the city. Kevin, I know you wanted to talk about this topic. Is this going to help sort of loosen the skids and make it a little bit easier for people to get into a home of their own?
Well, first of all, let's step back and ask why we have this affordability problem, right? Because it's new. It's relatively new. We've not had this in the U.S. And it's certainly not because we're Europe or Japan where we have a shortage of land and we're built out, okay? We've got plenty of land in the U.S. Maybe now, you know, is land cheaper in Kansas than it is in Rhode Island? Yes. But overall, though, that's not really our problem. That's not is what is driving it. It is because one of the legacies or hangovers of the Great Recession and the housing bubble is that new home starts, new home building plummeted. And it still has not recovered, okay? Now, that's important. Now, you're saying, okay, that's luxury homes, that's new homes. What about the existing housing market? How could that affect that? Here's why. You have to have a certain rate of production of new housing over time to offset the houses you lose to depreciation. Mm-hmm. Now, that's really important here in Philadelphia because we have one of the oldest housing stocks in the country. The median year built for the typical Philadelphia home is 1925.
Wow.
So that means 50% of our housing stock is over 100 years old. Mm-hmm. Think about it. So it needs a lot of maintenance, whether you're owning it or renting it, okay? And as homes depreciate, the rate of depreciation becomes galloping over time, right? You start to go slowly, and then it happens all at once, right? So as we lose older homes due to abandonment and physical depreciation, and new homes are not filling the gaps, that your housing supply is shrinking. What happens in Econ 101 when supply shrinks, right? The price of something goes up. Yeah. That's why we're having this affordability problem. So what can we do about it? Well, I have a very comprehensive one-point plan to fix it. It's called Build More Houses.
Build more houses.
I know it's complicated.
Break it down.
Explain
break
that.
It down. Break it down. Yes.
Don't use jargon like that, Kevin.
Sorry, I didn't mean to get all technical. But the bills and legislative solutions currently being considered by the mayor and council are well-intended. And I know that the popular demand for solutions is there, and they're being attentive to that. So that's to their credit. But as I see it, until we address that really fundamental issue of that here in Philadelphia, it's very expensive to build, and that's why we're not building, and we're a very poor city, highest poverty rate of any large U.S. city, right? That makes it very difficult. So I view the legislative solutions and policy solutions as being well-intentioned. I think they'll help ameliorate and slow the affordability problem and lessen the pain a bit. It's not sufficient to reverse it.
What would be sufficient?
We need to have, as I always say, we've got New York construction costs, but Baltimore rents and prices. Mm-hmm. We either need to become more wealthy, like New York, or more cost conscious, like say a Houston or a Tampa, where it's more reasonable.
And get rid of the red tape. You want to comment here?
I was just going to tie into that the last caller's comment about having the right guidance. Mm-hmm. It's so important, and it's more important, I think, now than ever because. And it's not, listen, I'm not the only great agent out there. I've done this for a long time, but there are some really excellent agents in Philadelphia and there's a lot of bad ones, I'll be honest. But you need someone that's going to take your hand. And yes, maybe they are normally a multi-million dollar producer, but this is your first home. It's your starter home. You've never done it before. You need that person that's going to really be able to access the programs that are out there, have a good lender if you need financing, mm-hmm. and really help you from start to finish. Every step of the way.
Yeah. So one thing we could do besides working on the supply side and building more homes is on the demand side, something I've advocated for, and that's educating young people on just the basic principles of personal finance. And that would include home ownership.
Yeah.
Because so many of them, especially those that come from underprivileged, low-income backgrounds, I mean, they don't even know how to open a bank account, much less apply for a mortgage.
That circles back to something I was trying to raise earlier, which is they make it so easy to put even a little bit of money in the stock market now, whether it's through Robinhood or just something you do passively through your employer. I feel like that's just going to feel easier and easier to people as opposed to going through the complication of trying to become a homeowner and saving up for the down payment and trying to access. I know there are plenty of great programs out there that help you if you're a veteran or if you have certain restrictions, but it just feels more complicated, Kevin. And I don't know how you talk to young people all the time. I don't know how you could convince them to go through the complication when there are such easy ways to invest.
Well, I'd love to tell you that actually a lot of young people are very interested in what we're talking about. Yeah. And I know that because Temple has me inside of West Philly High School and a couple of others. And these are kids that are coming from very challenging backgrounds that many of their parents have never owned homes themselves.
Yeah.
But these kids are very hungry and eager and interested in business and entrepreneurship, and they understand home ownership.
They do.
So we're actively on
the appetite is there is what you're saying from
so
what you
Temple is actively on the ground educating them now at 14, 15, 16, 17. So when they come out, they're better equipped to be able to get there.
Okay. That young education really changes mindsets. Let's bring in a caller. Elizabeth from Philadelphia is on the line. Elizabeth, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi, this is a great program. I'm a Philadelphia investment home owner, and I have two properties, investment properties in the city. And my son followed in my footsteps. He's born in 91, and he had flipped his first house into what is an investment property in Germantown, a beautiful old, it used to be a mansion, so it's got several apartments. Well, so he's sitting now with a 3.45 mortgage, so wow. Wonderful, you'd think, right? And his mortgage has doubled because of insurance rates going up for him, as well as there was a claim, a bogus claim, we believe, put in about his sidewalks, and his insurance company paid out $35,000. So his insurance went up as well. So yeah. Mortgage is wonderful, but now he's underwater. His rents don't pay his mortgage, whereas he was sitting pretty maybe 2 years ago. And I just wanted to
To raise that.
You know, look at the contrast.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank
you. That's Elizabeth from Philadelphia. Kate from New Jersey says, while home ownership is great, property taxes in New Jersey are the highest in the country, and my homeowner's insurance has skyrocketed.
Yeah,
similar incident that Elizabeth's talking about. You know, have you seen that? You know, Mike, where you know, folks get into it, they think it's going to be affordable, they're achieving this dream, and then boom, you're underwater. You can't barely afford what you got.
Yeah, it definitely happens. And I think that's why it's so important when you're guiding people when they're looking to buy. You don't want to be house poor. There's going to be things that happen. The water heater is going to break. The roof is going to leak. You're going to have some things that change in the future. So if this payment right now is comfortable, but another $100 or $200 would not be, you have to really think about that and get in at a very affordable place for you in your own circumstances, so that when the inevitable happens, you're not freaking out and like, what did I do?
Because right? You can't call the landlord.
No.
They're looking at you. Yeah.
And by the way, one of the bills being considered by council tomorrow is going to... It intended to expand tenants' rights by allowing tenants to, they will not have to pay their rent if there's an LNI code violation in a Philadelphia home being investigated. Until that violation is fixed, they can withhold rent, which may sound like it was a well-intended idea and maybe you know, sound good, but it comes with a significant moral hazard problem, which is that for a clever tenant or even a bad faith tenant, mm-hmm. and they do exist, as long, just like bad faith landlords, is that you can live rent-free by damaging your unit, right? I mean, just do something, file a complaint with LNI, which you can do right online, right? And then just withhold rent and then do it again when after it gets repaired. So, you know, I hope that our elected officials are taking some of these things into account when they consider this well-intended legislation to what are real problems.
Yeah, and some people are small landlords, too.
Yeah. That's the other thing. Philadelphia is known for that. Our landlords, their landlord concentration is very diffuse in Philadelphia. Large cities like New York, other cities like New York, San Fran, if you're renting an apartment, typically it's going to be from a corporate landlord. In Philadelphia, your typical landlord is what I call an accidental landlord. They're a mom and pop who inherited the row home that one of them grew up in, the parents died, and now they're just getting a few extra $100 a month from that home. Well, small landlords operate on very, very tight margins. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They cannot absorb additional costs like large landlords can, and they have much more difficulty passing it on to their tenants because their tenants aren't usually very rich either, right?
Yeah. And they don't really raise the rents a lot. Yeah.
So it's very difficult to try to impose additional costs on the Philadelphia rental community without having some severe consequences.
But going back to what you said earlier, Kevin, about trying to increase supply, I just wanted to get into real quickly as we wrap up the hour what some of the trade-offs are of that. So if you want to build cheaper, my thought goes to maybe you have to pay the people who are building less, or maybe you have to build more shoddily, or you have to, you know, tolerate maybe really, really rapid development in certain areas that's going to displace some people. Like, can we just be just clear-eyed about what the trade-offs are if we're trying to get to like a Houston-style building model?
So there are basically four inputs to home building.
Yeah.
You got land, you got materials, you've got labor, and then you've got overhead, taxes, regulations, things like that. Philadelphia is largely built out. We don't have a whole lot of large land parcels, but we can redevelop. The land bank was originally created to do that, but unfortunately it fell to politics.
Yep.
No point in getting into it, but so that takes that off the table. Then you've got materials. Materials are largely imports.
Yeah.
Mr. Trump has decided to impose
tariffs.
Severe tariffs on them. Okay, Chinese steel, Canadian lumber, electricity, I mean, copper, wiring,
etc.
You can't do anything about tariffs, so that takes materials off the board. That leaves labor. Now, the reason our labor costs are so high, and that is a big driver, is unions.
Yeah.
I don't see Philadelphia becoming non-union, not becoming an open shop anytime soon. So what does that leave? Taxes and regulations.
Yep.
That constitutes collectively only about 20% of the cost of a home.
But that's okay?
But that is
target.
Something. But, you know, we could reduce, accelerate permitting time, so we could make zoning more transparent and by right. Taxes are a big thing that we could reduce. And then there's these regulations. They're always coming up with new bills and council as solutions, but they never really consider the cost of those initiatives. They're only looking at the benefits, like the tenants' right ones that, right. That I just suggested. So we have some wiggle room locally here in Philly.
Not as much
but
as you'd like.
Not as much as we think or we'd like, no.
Yeah. Okay, well, look, I don't think we're going to be able to get to any more callers, so I just want to thank Pete from Clifton Heights.
I know, we were, I was hoping
Beverly from Norristown and Bruce from Havertown for holding. I'm sorry we couldn't get to you. But I do want to thank both of our wonderful guests this hour, Mike Coleman, realtor and adjunct instructor at Temple University's Real Estate Institute. Hey, Mike, thanks for being here again on Studio 2.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
And thank you as well, Kevin Gillen, principal research fellow at the Wilbur C. Henderson Real Estate Institute at the LeBeau College of Business at Drexel University. Go Dragons. And thank you, Kevin.
Thank you.
And Desiree says online, as someone who has watched families truly transform their futures through home ownership, I still believe buying a home is a powerful part of the American dream, especially in communities where ownership was not always accessible to us. So there are some still people who still believe in that. And by the way, we couldn't do what we do today without our producers. So I got to shout them out and say thank you to Debbie Builder, Andreas Copes, and Hazel Mae Bryan. Also to Mike Schiffler, our visual producer, to Al Banks and Tina Calliquet, who engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCory. From Studio 2 here at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. Reminding you that marshmallow tastes like marshmallow.
This is Studio 2.
What does it taste like?
We'll talk to you tomorrow.
That's it.